We should make it clear, though, it will be more than a can of pudding in a USB cable. So,
well,
it should be something.
This is the 23rd episode of Bad Voltage, right? Two Little Ducks, 23. What's interesting about this is, did you know there's a thing called the 23 Enigma, right? Where everything is connected directly or indirectly to the number 23. Like, this is actually a true thing that real people who are insane believe, right? Like,
right.
You get 23 chromosomes from each of your parents, and the 23rd chromosome determines the gender of a given child. And Earth's axis is off by 23 degrees, right? And the Knights Templar had 23 Grand Masters. And Kurt Cobain died in 1994. 1 plus 9 plus 9 plus 4 is 23. And Kurt Cobain was born in 1967.
Dude,
1 plus 9 plus 6 plus 7 is 23.
Last night, I ate 23 Cheetos.
There it is. You see? Everything that happens is connected directly or indirectly to the number 23.
What has 23 little ducks got to do with anything? What is the, was the little ducks thing that you mentioned?
Two little ducks is bingo calling for 22. Okay. But thank you for stepping good and hard on that joke. We appreciate it.
Wait a minute. Hold up. Did you just open our podcast with a bingo joke?
I did. I just died a little inside.
Yeah, but okay, none of you noticed it because it was sly. Right,
we are changing our target demographic for this show to 60-year-old women. Correct.
Right. I know that you smell like old people, Ack, but I didn't realize you'd actually become old.
And you do know now, the next time you miss the show, you're going to be Bingo Chips as your avatar, or a Bingo Dabber.
Can we nickname him Bingo Chips?
What the hell, Bingo Chips?
All right.
Moving right along. Bingo Chips.
All right.
For the old school boys.
Bingo Chips.
Today on Bad Voltage, we're interviewing Emma Marshall from System 76. They make computers. Jono, what else are we covering?
We're also going to talk about technical solutions to social problems. There's a lot of forums and communication channels out there, and they have features for banning and blocking whatever else. But are there more elegant technical solutions for how we work together as people?
And then for your listening pleasure, we will have a Blender Smackdown, which I'd like to add was recorded in 3D.
What's next, Bingo Chips?
We've decided. I still don't know what Bingo Chips are. We've decided that Brian and I should debate something, but the important point apparently is the debate rather than actually the truth of what we're saying. So we'll each be taking positions opposite to those we normally think.
Okay, hombre.
And now, Bad Voltage.
Damn it, Jono.
Recently, sadly, we had to ban someone from the Bad Voltage forum. I'm not going to get into the details about what happened. Anyone needs to know is that we require a certain level of respect, no matter what the discussion is, and that was breached. And so we had to ban this person. And what surprised me when we as a team decided to do this was that Discourse, the platform that we use for the Bad Voltage forum at community.badvoltage.org, doesn't really have a feature for banning people. It only has a means to suspend them. Now, there is something in there about blocking people, but if you want to really kick someone out, you got to suspend them. And I spent quite a bit of time trying to find how you ban somebody, and it turns out that the reason why they have this, and I don't want to misspeak for the Discourse project, but I believe that the reason why they have a suspend feature is because they want to encourage people to solve problems without kicking people out. They want people to have a discussion around, like, before this person was banned, they had a warning, they had an opportunity to you know, be more respectful, and they declined to do that. So it means that the ban hammer is used less often with Discourse. Now, this raises, we don't really want to get into the rights and wrongs of Discourse, but this raises an interesting question about how to solve social problems with technology. You know, many forums or IRC channels or other communications mechanisms, they have a means to kick people out. or to ban people. And I thought that was interesting about discourse taking a slightly different route, which is very discourse.
It's very hippie.
It's very hippie and try to spin things up a little bit.
I think it's a little bit idealistic, to be honest.
Yeah, well,
what about accounts that are created purely to spam that clearly and obviously have no intent to ever participate, which we get, you know, a couple thousand a day attempts at those. And while
at LQ?
Yeah, at LQ. And while our spam detection algorithms are pretty good, there's still some accounts that get through just to spam porn or something ridiculous. So either banning or deleting those accounts seems like the best
course of action. Jeremy has walked through this fire on a daily basis for a decade now.
Right. Going on 15 years now, yep. I was kind of curious when you guys suggested this as a topic, because this is a topic that I could probably legitimately talk about for 7 hours. having 7 minutes is kind of tough.
Now, what's interesting, just to kind of clarify things as well on the discourse side of things, and again, we don't want to talk about discourse exclusively here, but it looks like they used to have a ban feature, and I think they may have taken it out, because there was a discussion in June 2013 around banned and blocked and what the difference is. And with banned, it's that you can't log in at all, but blocked users can log in and otherwise interact, but just can't post or start new topics. So I think that right now with discourse, blocked users, they can't log in and they can't interact. They can log in and otherwise interact, but they can't post or start new topics, which...
What is the point of being able to log in but not interact?
That's what I was thinking. Like, what's the point of that?
I think you're allowed to reply, but not start new topics, I think.
Yeah. Well, it says...
Well, then they don't know what the word blocked means.
Right. And then suspended means that the person can't access it. Now, Discourse does have a spam feature where it will prevent logins from that IP address, which I'm assuming is like with other forums. So it seems like these pieces are there. It's just, in many ways, it seems to be around the syntactic kind of definition of what these things do.
Sure.
But I mean, can we, you know, do we feel like we can solve social problems with technology?
Well,
because it seems like all of these platforms have the same basic features, like ban, block, suspend.
Well, I mean, bear in mind that discourse as a philosophy sort of comes out of the Stack Exchange philosophy, which was they sat down and said, okay, we have a particular social goal for this. There were question and answer sites before, but they wanted to enforce a particular way that the community should work, that things should work, that the community should be set up, that answers should be accepted and rejected, that there shouldn't be discussion of answers in the answers. They had a very clear social goal for how they thought discussion and questions and answers should work for Stack Exchange. Did that, it seems to have worked, or at least it's fulfilled the goals they set out for it. And the idea of discourse is very similar in that the whole way the software is built embodies a particular social ideal. Up until Stack Exchange and Discourse came along, I'd have said attempting to solve social problems with technical solutions is stupid and pointless and possibly evil.
I agree.
Don't do it. But I think certainly I've become a bit more of a believer in this than I ever was. I mean, you know, you look at /.karma, the last big attempt to do this sort of thing, or Reddit upvoting and downvoting, and that has had no effect on solving social issues.
I think they're trying to solve different problems, though. I mean, I think it's... I definitely believe that the design of your software, right, will have a clear impact on how users behave within that software. And, you know, I know Atwood's philosophy is that you should encourage people to take the path of least resistance, and he's a big believer in Dan Ariely's book on that topic that came out recently.
Yeah.
Which is a really good book, right? So if you make the right thing easy to do, more users will do the right thing. I think the big question is, what's the right thing? And because we run multiple different sites, I have multiple different philosophies within those sites. At Linux Exchange, we kind of take the Stack Exchange philosophy. At LQ, we kind of purposely don't try to model user behavior, because I think it's a really difficult thing to do correctly, and there's a ton of unintended consequences that come along with that. And I think they're already seeing some reprisal at the Stack Exchange sites in general. I think they started off gangbusters because they had two really smart, really good programmers who had huge cults of personality behind them. And so the sites took off really well, but they're hitting a curve now where before they had a ton of easy questions out there, a ton of people willing to answer them, and so their growth was insane. But I think unsustainable, and they're reaching that point now where new questions, a lot of them are just crap because people don't care, and the people that invested a lot of time are getting frustrated because we've gone through this curve at LQ, believe me. The senior, you start with a small core of really smart people who are really friendly, and your community grows like crazy, right? And then a few years in, which is where they're getting now, that core starts to become a little disillusioned and disenfranchised because so many of the same new questions keep coming in. And
right.
Then people say, well, no, they used to be friendly, but now they're not friendly anymore. They have that core of people that some would say become insular. And I think you're looking at, if you look at Stack Exchange reputation now in general, you see a lot of why is Stack Exchange changing? And I think some of their social modeling might come back to bite them a few years down the line. Well, it probably seemed good before, and they'll either have to adapt it, which they're smart enough, I think, to do. But I think when you try to model social problems with technology, you got to be really, really careful.
I would agree with you as well, Jeremy, in the sense of there are approaches that you can use, but it doesn't really attack the core of the challenges in many ways. I think the same thing is affects conferences. So like running CLS every year, or people see this with other own conferences, and we saw this with the Ubuntu Developer Summit. You can have some people who are very outgoing and gregarious, and then you have some people who are very quiet and kind of maybe a little bit more pensive in the way that they assess, you know, problems and situations. And you always try to create this environment where it equalizes people, where you want people who are like, there's a view that, you know, you don't want people being too overbearing and gregarious, but you also want to bring the other people up. And I've never really seen it work. Like, I've seen it work in some degrees, because I think a lot of what defines social behavior is people being around a community long enough to feel comfortable. Like, we see this many times where we've seen this in the Bad Voltage community. Some people joined and they were a little quiet on the forum at first, a little nervous, and then they really get into the flow of things.
They were scared of Stuart.
Like, I don't want to name check people, but I think a wonderful example of that on the Bad Voltage forum is Old Geek. Like, I remember when he joined, he seemed very, very nervous about contributing because he felt like he was, you know, around smart people and didn't want to look like an idiot. And we made it very clear over and over again, like, hey man, you're part of us, right? You know, like, you feel free to share whatever you want. And I feel like he's really blossomed, but that wasn't the technology that drove that. That was the community that drove that.
Right.
We just told a guy on our forum that he's really blossomed. And I think that is just wonderful. I think that's the takeaway from this whole segment right now, is that is just wonderful.
Okay, you're pretty too.
I think that's one thing that's cool when you have a community that's just starting out and a little bit smaller and growing, is you can go from zero to really being a top contributor in a fair short amount of time, where once a community's been around for 20 years or something, it's a little more intimidating to jump into that community, right? Because you're almost going into... You think of in your room full of a bunch of strangers, it's easy to strike up a conversation. If one stranger comes into a room of 10 best friends, it's difficult to break that circle.
Yeah,
and where it gets complicated, I think, is that, I mean, of course, the communities that the four of us hang out in are by and large open source, right? So they're communities that know how communities work. Whereas outside, whereas there seems to be an opportunity for something like Discourse is for, I don't know, some company that knows nothing about communities, or some group that knows nothing about communities, is being able to install something that basically provides means and methods in which people can form a community. It takes the community management out of the picture, which all of us have done in our own way in the various communities that we're part of. But it sounds to me that, like, we don't think that that's really possible to a reasonable extent. It's possible around the edges, but it still requires human intervention to be able to define those.
I don't know that
rules.
Even if it's very possible, so. I don't know that that's something we want to have happen. I mean, the more we let our software and servers define how we interact with each other as people, that's just way too many steps closer to Skynet for my comfort. I feel like if you're banning someone, I want an actual person pushing that button. I don't want software doing it. That makes me all creeped out and feel funny inside.
Yeah.
Well, there's
plus, I mean, like I kind of said before, what is the correct way to interact in a community? I think that varies so much by community that while there are certain core tenets that I think all communities should follow. You know, kind of the bad voltage policy of just don't be a dick. Be excellent to each other should span all communities, yes. I think.
That's why there, it's on the bottom of every page. Perfectly good example of what Brian says about allowing the technology to define how stuff works is Hacker News. Hacker News has it's got a bunch of automated stuff which monitors the posts and it does things like there's flame war detection. And if certain moderators vote a thing down, it'll disappear and so on and so forth. And Matthew Garrett, who we've had on the show before, has suggested that this is great for technical stuff, but for social things, for discussions of social issues in technology, it's really bad because Hacker News has a very big kind of hive mind around the idea of things like truly great programming skill is an inborn thing and not something that can be learned, as an example. You know, the myth of the super programmer and so on. That, now, you might believe that, you might not believe it. The Hacker News community believe it fairly strongly. But importantly, that's reinforced by essentially the software making sure that social stuff essentially disappears off the front page. Matt Garrett wrote a thing about this 3 or 4 years ago. And I think that's a really good example of the technology being built. And it shapes not only the method in which you interact, but the subjects about which interaction can happen.
Skynet.
It actually steers the conversation, which I think is dangerous.
That is Skynet. It's freaking at that Skynet. Point. I mean, you know, it's sort of Skynet 0.1 alpha, but it's Skynet. That's what it is.
Hacker News is the core of Skynet.
What do you think is the biggest risks to Skynet when it comes to this software? Like, is there a particular tool or service or site that we think is like the promotional video for Cyberdyne Systems?
Stop asking that question because I know exactly what the answer is because I have thought long and hard about this. It's porn. And it's going to be a real problem when the robots control all of that because who knows what sort of weird stuff is going to occur. And I'm not okay with it.
Presumably, robots are going to want robot porn.
No, that's right? Just it. They're trying to modify how we interact with each other as people. So what are they going to come up with in that regard? It's not cool, and it doesn't make me comfortable. And Stuart is freaking out about it right now, I can tell.
Isn't robot porn just binary? So are we going to binarytube.com or something?
No, dear Lord, no. Dear Lord, no. That's just it. You can't get inside of a robot's brain. They're too crazy, so you don't know what's going to happen.
Nah, you see, I mean, most of it's binary most of the time, but everyone dreams of ternary porn. No one gets this joke, honestly. Oh, that was good.
No, that was great. That was great. Honestly, hey, everyone. I would love to hear everyone's thoughts on Stuart's joke about ternary porn here. So if you can go to community.badvoltage.org and let Stuart know, did that joke hit? Did that joke miss? How did it make you feel inside? That would be really great.
Maybe we should set up a poll.
Yes, we absolutely should.
I don't even think we need a poll. I think we know the answer to this question.
I hate all of you, by the way.
As you may have noticed, here in Bad Voltage, we tend to, in each episode, review something. Sometimes it's a piece of hardware. Sometimes it's a piece of software. It has been suggested at one point that I should review shampoo. This hasn't happened yet, but we have something almost as awesome for you today. Jono recently got a new blender, you see, and that brought up the discussion of let's have Jono review his new fancy blender. Well, then Jeremy chimed in. Jeremy also has a blender that he uses. Stuart, as well, believe it or not, has a blender, as do I. So today, we're going to roundtable, rapid-fire review all four blenders. And these are different blenders, different ways of pureeing food. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the Bad Voltage Epic Blender Review. Stuart, you go first.
So I thought to myself, fantastic, right? Got the email saying, you know, blender review. And I thought, brilliant, the 3D tool of choice for tools. By which I mean anyone who's not in the 3D industry doesn't use Maya, RenderMan, whatever. And then I discovered, as Brian's just pointed out, we're not talking about blender with a capital B. We're talking about blenders, things that blend. Now, I've got a blender, right? Because I'm English, it's actually a food processor. It was a present for my parents, but I decided to learn about food. Follows my cooking Tumblr will know about this stuff. More importantly, it fulfills in my life the role a faithful dog does. It does what it's told, doesn't leave crap everywhere when I don't want it to. My blender, which is a Kenwood, is excellent at chopping spinach or mixing the sage and apricots and pine nuts for pork loin stuffing. And frankly, that's all its little heart desires. I suspect next, from the remainder of them, you'll hear about blenders which can chop up a brick or whatever, which is complete overkill in a similar way to a sledgehammer cracking a walnut or invading to punish Iraq or just New York as a whole. But speak on, co-presenters.
While Langridge's rather predictably chosen cheapness with his Kenwood rusty nail spinner, on this side of the cultural chasm, we've gone with a Vitamix, the Rolls-Royce, or rather the Tesla of badass blenders. Now, I have to confess, I know precisely jack shit about blenders. They are jugs that you chuck things into and grind those things up. I use blenders for smoothies, and that, to be honest, is my current fad. I judge blenders on whether they blend the shit I put in there. Now, my wife, Erica, she is much more of a blender nerd, and this is why we have a Vitamix. We started out with a Ninja, which she raved about, and then the Ninja became passé, and the Vitamix stepped in. I was assured that this thing could blend a human skull if we needed it to, and its multiple speeds are something pretty cool. It is sturdy, large, it is configurable, and is also really bloody expensive. To be honest, I prefer the Ninja, as it is smaller and more convenient for smoothies, which is all I care about. If, though, you want to make soups, blend ice, cheese, or any one of a million other things, it seems the Vitamix is a pretty solid bet. It is powerful, made to last, and big enough to make lots of different things. To me, though, well, it's a blender.
Now, while I must concur with Jono's assessment of X parsimonious blender choice, I must disagree with his assessment of the Vitamix at the Tesla of blenders. The Tesla brand exudes not only quality, but sleek, out-design that includes cutting-edge technology. While the Vitamix is both powerful and of quality construction, its design reminds one more of a Ford Edsel than anything produced by Tesla. This brings me to the blender that I own, which is in fact the Tesla of blenders, the BlendTec. Now, the BlendTec may be familiar to many of you as the device featured in the popular Will It Blend web series. And while it features a slick, svelte design, it's also capable of blending nearly anything. It's made quick work of everything from iPhones and marbles to Justin Bieber CDs and hockey pucks. And that said, I use it mostly to blend food-related items. The device has six buttons for preset speeds, and along with an up and down button for variable speed and a pulse button. The blender also, though, has something in common with another one of Elon Musk's companies in that, when it's on its highest setting, it's approximately as loud as a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket being launched. Now, unfortunately, much like the Vitamix, the BlendTec is bloody expensive for a blender. If you just want to make smoothies, something like the Nutribullet probably makes more sense. If you must have the most excellent consumer-grade blender available, however, the BlendTec is really slick and won't take up your entire countertop.
Thanks, Jeremy. I have a Ninja.
Welcome, Brian.
I use it to make milkshakes.
Thanks, Brian.
You're totally welcome, John.
Thanks, Brian.
So, that was a pretty exhaustive review, Brian.
But no, seriously. Right. I've used it to make chocolate milkshakes. Just to give you guys some more details, I've used it to make strawberry milkshakes. Yeah. One time, I took some shake and I made a chocolate milkshake with peanut butter cups in it. That was incredible. And I did that all in the blender, you see.
Now, see, I like the fact that I could blend your Ninja in my BlendTec.
That is pretty cool.
I like the fact that the three of you have all sat back and gone, well, okay, I need some kind of a kitchen tool which is capable of getting milk and cutting holes in it. And so what I need is the thing which drilled the channel tunnel out. You're all mental.
I have to say,
Stuart has a point there.
I'm with Ack on this. Like, this kind of like mine's bigger than yours competition with blenders is a bit ridiculous, which is obviously the reason why Jeremy's got a BlendTec. Like, you just don't need that kind of power, right?
Admittedly,
this is coming from the guy who has the more expensive blender that looks like it's from the 1960s.
Exactly.
You see, here's the thing, right? Much as you're trying to outperform everybody with both looks and power, right? I don't care about looks, right? All I care about
that's
is having
obviously
blenders.
True. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Total stereo agreement from everybody.
Like, why do you need? I mean, Jeremy, in all seriousness, like, why? Like, what would you put into that thing that you would need? Like, I get the whole Will It Blend series, but I mean, I don't really need something that can blend an iPad, right? I mean, I just need something that, yeah, that works
to
blend.
To be fair,
ice.
I have never actually put an electronic device in the BlendTec. I'm kind of curious and might now, but I had a smaller blender before and wanted something a little more interesting under the illusion that I was going to make like a bunch of things like wheatgrass and stuff, which I have literally never done.
Nice.
And the two that kept coming up were the Vitamix and the BlendTec, and the Vitamix was more expensive. You need that stupid tamper thing, which I don't even understand, and it looks like crap. So I went with the less expensive, better looking,
BlendTec.
What I would consider the obvious option.
To be fair, the Vitamix does look like something that came out of It's
and
a wonderful
giant.
I actually kind of like the look of the Vitamix. I think it's a badass looking blender. But here's the thing. There's really only two things that a blender should be judged on. One, does it make good milkshakes? Which I believe all four of our blenders will do. The second one is humanity better because this blender existed? And I think the only one that meets that classification is Jeremy's BlendTec because it has blended an iPad. The rest of us just have milkshake makers. But I would be so sad on the inside if I'd never seen an iPod dropped into a BlendTec and just completely reduced into dust and rubble.
That's fair.
Let's be clear here, right? I suspect all four of us have at some point done some DIY, fixing up your house or whatever, yeah? And so you've used a drill, a hand drill. Have you, at any point, possibly when no one was looking, pretended that drill was a gun?
What?
Wait, what?
Have you ever pretended that a drill was a gun? I thought you were quite anti-gun. Nah. Pretending that you have a gun is a thing. And I think...
Hang on, you're telling me that you prance around your flat with an electric drill pretending it's a gun.
I assume going pew, pew, pew.
I would say, so you're telling me you've never done that, but it does strike me that maybe you've never actually used a drill.
No, everyone
just used a drill. I
assume Jono's drop
cam is duct taped to the wall, not drilled anywhere.
Exactly. But I
am not, it has to be said, a fan of DIY.
Okay, where are you going with this, Stuart?
The same mentality which encourages people to get way more powerful drills than they need is at play here as well, right? I mean, yes, we are all very clear. Jeremy does not need a thing which can blend diamonds into paste. He just doesn't, right?
No, hang on,
you were going to get wheatgrass, but I've seen wheatgrass. It doesn't need a thing that can blend a brick, right?
But hang on a second. The one thing I'm failing to understand in your argument here is, surely that's about buying a more powerful drill. Like, what's using it like a gun got to do with anything?
It's the same kind of these things are interesting.
You get one of those ones with the two handles, so it's like an Uzi, right?
Jeremy, frankly, I don't think has the BlendTec because he needs its blending capability. It's because it's cool, because it sounds like a rocket when you turn it on.
Yeah,
no, there's definitely a cool factor.
You want a blender,
I mean, to be fair, for people
into,
out there, right. If you're really into blenders, the BlendTec and the Vitamix both do things that a lot of other blenders won't do, like make ice cream because the blade spins so fast, and you can actually heat soup up in it. It has a setting that it goes that fast.
That's pretty rad.
It will legitimately do some things that most blenders won't do. Do I use those? No.
No,
are they there?
But it's cool to have it anyway, right?
Right, but you look at it and you make a milkshake and you hear that thing blasting off, and the milkshake tastes just a little more delicious.
Here's the thing:
it's the same reason you buy a laptop with a fingerprint reader on it, which was great for the first week, and then you just get bored and start typing your password.
My car,
almost exactly.
My car is an automatic car. Now it's nothing special, but it has settings on it for dropping it manually into first and second gear, even though it's an automatic car. It's not necessary, but it's cool that it's there because it's an extra lever and an extra button, and that's awesome, and that's the kind of thing that the BlendTec gives
features
you.
Just out of curiosity, Ak, do you sometimes pretend that your blender's a hat?
No.
Is there anything else that you
he is milkshake
little,
man
let's pretend with?
No.
Okay, on the line now, we've got Emma Marshall, who is the marketing manager at System 76, purveyor of fine computers that run Ubuntu. How are you doing, Emma?
I'm doing good. How's everyone else?
Awesome.
Living the dream. Living the dream. So, first of all, tell us, why don't you give us the quick elevator pitch about what System 76 does, for those people who don't know what it is.
So, we manufacture Ubuntu laptops, desktops, and servers. So basically, we just design the products and develop a kernel and develop a System 76 driver to make sure all our products work perfectly with Ubuntu. And then we provide support and service to back those products up.
And I guess one of the first questions I have is, why Ubuntu? I mean, you've got like a cornucopia of Linux distributions out there to choose between. I mean, many of which are very, very good. There's Fedora, there's OpenSUSE, there's Debian. Why did you pick Ubuntu? I mean, I know this is probably before your time, but why the decision to go with Ubuntu?
Indeed. It seems like a crazy decision to me.
I think that's more of a question for Carl. He's our owner, and you know, he learned about Ubuntu and was instantly addicted. He really liked where it was going and thought it would be perfect to start a business to help expand open source, and Ubuntu was the key to making that happen. It's a very polished Linux distro, so I think it's definitely the perfect distribution for us and our products.
It totally makes sense. Now, I mean, he's probably really regretting his decision, what with the current Ubuntu user interface, but totally makes sense from the period of time you made that decision and everything, right?
I don't think there's any regrets whatsoever.
All right.
A question. You do primarily laptops and desktops, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense of what sort of percentage of people are going for laptops, which percentage of people are going for desktops, what the split is?
No, I mean, we have a lot of different customers. I mean, servers are pretty big for us, too. It's not something people talk about very often, but we have a pretty nice split of business and personal customers. So we see a lot of desktops going towards businesses. Lately, laptops have been picking up for businesses, but it seems like the personal usage prefers the laptops, and businesses like the desktops and the servers. But I'm not aware of a split between each.
I mean, there's been a lot of discussion in recent years about the death of the desktop, or the decline of people buying laptops and desktop computers in favor of tablets and smartphones. Are you seeing that at System 76? Are you seeing fewer
not
shipments?
Not at all. Not at all.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, we have a pretty heavy desktop market.
So in recent years, you know, and Brian touched on this a little bit earlier on, there's been some frustration, if you will, with some members of the Ubuntu community and the Linux community about some of the decisions that have been made at Ubuntu Towers with regards to things like Unity and some of the decisions. Have you found that that's affected sales at System 76? Does that affect your bottom line at all?
No, it really doesn't. I know that Our computers aren't just Ubuntu friendly, they're Linux friendly. So a lot of people put different distributions on them anyway. So it seems more of a community impact when they make big decisions like that. And, you know, there is discussion around the office, but at the end result, it doesn't affect our sales. Our sales have done nothing but increase constantly over the last few years. So if it might affect attitudes of our customers, but it doesn't affect our sales.
So with Ubuntu moving towards more of a touch-friendly interface, do you guys have plans for a smaller form factor tablet device or no?
I can't really comment on that, but we're definitely always working on new...
Ha!
Emma, just so you know, it's totally okay if you comment on it. I talk to everybody. They're cool with it.
more importantly, it's a secret between just the four of us and our 28 million listeners. Just go ahead and share.
Yeah, I think I'll just stick with my answer. We do have a wonderful touch desktop. It's the Sable Touch, and we do have the Darter Ultra Touch. So we are working with touch. How about that?
How about that?
Okay. Message received. So we're looking forward to the System 76 tablet coming out. So when's that happening?
Heard it here first.
We're gonna get her in.
Wait, guys, we gotta talk hypotheticals here. Emma, if you personally were to release a System 76 tablet, when would you do it, and what would the specs be?
You guys are killing me.
It's okay. It's okay.
I would do it as soon as the operating system is ready.
That's a good point, because Ubuntu Touch is a really long way from being ready. So that's a pretty good point. So a while. So 3 or 4 years.
a slightly different question. If I were to unfairly characterize the wider laptop market, it would be a world in which all the major league OEMs, Dell, Toshiba, Lenovo, everybody, basically sits back in a chair and waits for Apple to invent a new thing and then badly copies it. One of the things that a smaller firm like System76 could potentially do is start putting innovative new stuff into laptops and desktops before the big, clunky corporate behemoths get a chance to do it. But I'm aware that the hardware market, we talked about this in a previous Bad Voltage, the hardware market is a complicated thing and you can't necessarily spin up a new fab line just because you'd like it. How much ability has System76 got to do things ahead of the majors rather than riding on the coattails?
Well, we have been developing a really strong relationship with Intel and our hardware manufacturers. So I think it just depends more on that relationship developing more and sales increasing even higher. So it's just about how your sales are doing, I think, and I'm not really into that back end part of all the dealings, but I know that we've been able to manufacture the Ubuntu keyboards, which was a really big step for us. Nice. So I know that we do have some wiggle room, but I'm just not sure when. I mean, we have a design team that's working on new products, so I'm not sure exactly when that will be, but we're hoping the Ubuntu community does increase so that our sales can increase even more.
All right, I got a bit of a tangent question, just something I've been curious about for a long time. Being as you guys are kind of Linuxy hardware makers, do you ever sell laptops and desktops to people and then get support calls talking about installing Windows on them?
Probably every day.
Really?
And it's not, I mean, we don't exactly turn people away, but, you know, we're happy to help point them in the right direction to find Windows drivers or something, but we just don't provide specific support for that. But we do our best to get it working for customers, because we do know a lot of businesses do still rely on Windows, and dual boot is an option that we recommend, or running in a virtual machine, and we're happy to help people set that up. But after that, we're kind of just doing Ubuntu support.
So, you know, probably the most difficult question that I've got to ask here, if I was to summarize like the feedback that I've seen from other people about System76, and also this kind of mirrors my own views as well, is that System76 have some really good looking gear, nice range of products, a really nice integration of Ubuntu. Everything works as you'd expect, you know, good company, good people, good experience in terms of purchasing, good prices. But really the only downside that I've seen people talk about is that some of the gear at System76 feels a little bit plasticky. I wouldn't go so far as saying cheap, but a little less rugged than people might want. Is that something you've had feedback on? And if so, like, what would your response to that be?
We don't receive that feedback too often, but it is great feedback to hear that from you. What I would say is for people to actually hold laptops and put them in their hands and see if that's, you know, exactly how they feel. But some of our products are made of metal. I know our Galago Ultra Pro is made of magnesium. So I think that's just a preference thing. We're not really going for the rugged, take this out in the war zone kind of laptop.
Right.
We're just focusing on high quality hardware, and a lot of, you know, we like the design and everything is a big focus, but, you know, the power is under the hood.
So, Emma, thank you so much for coming on the show. You know, I think we'd all agree that we're all big fans of what you guys are doing. And,
absolutely.
You know, I guess one final question really is like, what's coming in the future for System 76?
What's next?
What can we expect to see?
Well, we are working on new products. We're kind of waiting for the Intel CPU release for a new laptop line. So that's coming around the corner. It's probably going to be here before we know it. But right now we're doing our back to school sales. So that's going to be going on for quite a while longer. and then some other awesome. Interesting things that we can't really comment on, but I would definitely recommend staying tuned.
yeah, looking forward to that tablet and smartwatch.
oh yeah, totally.
If someone wanted to stay tuned, where would you recommend they stay tuned to?
Our social networks.
Right. So this is System 76.
Our social networks are the best source for the most up to date announcements.
Okay. So that's on what, Facebook, Google Plus, Twitter?
Bangarang.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Perfect.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Emma, and all the best for the future.
All right. Well, thanks. Bye. Have a great day, guys.
So as many regular listeners probably know, here at Bad Voltage, we really like to debate with each other and you know, sometimes harass each other in the process. So recently, we came up with a good idea, or what we think is a good idea. Well, you guys could be the judge of that. Where, you know, as you've noticed, we've been doing a little more of the kind of contests and kind of things just to spice the show up a little bit. So what we're going to do is have a little bit of a reverso debate here in which each of us are going to debate with one of the others, and you have to take a position that is actually the antithesis of your actual opinion. So how we're going to do this is we're going to start out, and then this show, Brian and Stuart are going to debate about the desktop UI paradigm. And like I said, they both have to take what is the opposite of their actual opinion. And then at the end of the show, we're going to create a poll in the forum, and we're going to let you, the community, decide who you think won the debate. And then next show, Jono and I are going to debate, and then the winner of each one will go in the final, where we'll have a special guest be the decider along with the community in the final debate.
Okay, so so being as you guys are making me and Stuart be the guinea pigs for this horrible, horrible idea.
And for those of you who don't like this idea, it was Jono's idea.
I know we're not supposed to agree.
Just for the record.
Given that we haven't started yet, I agree with Brian at this point.
now, what do we have to pretend that we agree with
for this
first attempt?
So the topic of the discussion was the desktop UI paradigm.
Yep.
So you can debate however you want, but it has to be the opposite of your actual opinion.
Right. So to summarize, I'd say, Brian, your viewpoint here is that desktops should be as simple and as effortless as possible. And Unity, obviously, is a wonderful example of that. We all know your love for Unity.
God damn it.
And then Mr. Langridge, you, a well-known fan of simplicity, should believe that desktops are way too simple and they should be complicated with more buttons and scroll bars and more KDE for everyone. So, begin.
Do you want to go first? I can't do an opening statement. Yeah,
I absolutely want to go first because I have a very strong opinion about this. Now,
maybe each of you can make your opening statements. Why don't we do that, right?
So opening statements.
Opening statements. This is a very, very clear issue. If you make a user environment that is easy to use, people will have an easy time using it. Ergo, you should not do anything else because doing anything else would be really, really, really stupid. Good example. Let's go back to, let's say, old school Unix before it had an X windowing system, before it had any sort of graphical environment on it. Was it cool? Yeah, sure, it was cool. Did people use it? A couple of extra bearded people used it, but didn't really go anywhere. Now you've got Linux, a similar sort of environment with the beauty that is the all brown and orange Unity plastered on top of it, and it is glorious, and people all around the world are using it. Jono, how many people are using Ubuntu worldwide right now?
Like 25, 30 million people.
Like 25 to 30 million people. Let me ask Jono a question. Jono, how many people do you think would be using Unity right now if it did not have an easy-to-use graphical user interface?
Oh, I don't think many people, because people want simplicity, as you make
Jono
very clear,
says right? That zero people would be using it. That is an end of my argument, because no other argument needs to be made. Stuart, what sort of random nonsense do you want to spew out about this topic?
Now let's be clear here, people, right? When Brian says what he wants is simplicity, he's actually lying. What he wants is a desktop which only does about 10% of what it is you actually need to do. Because instead of you having your computer and doing what you want with it, you get your computer and do what Brian wants you to do with it. It's not at all clear to me that I want anyone else deciding for me what my machine should be able to do. And if I were to have someone else deciding for me, it certainly wouldn't be bloody Lunduk. So... This is the important point, right? When was the last time you used a machine and thought, you know what? This machine, it does too much. I'd much rather it did less, right? Nobody thinks this. No one thinks this. There are an awful lot of people, Brian clearly among them, with the viewpoint he's defending here, who are of the opinion that you shouldn't be able to do everything. Perhaps, you know, I mean, if you look at the example, the sort of thing Brian's talking about, maybe something you want to do interferes with his business model. Maybe something that you want to do isn't something that Brian thinks is important. And therefore, that stuff should all be crossed off. You shouldn't be allowed to use your computer the way you want to. You should have to use it the way Brian wants to. And I, for one, and I would say every other one of those 25 million users that you're talking about feels the same way.
Isn't that elitism though, Ack? You sound like an elitist right now.
Hold on, Giano. You need to sit down in your chair because I need to rebut this horrible pile, Brian, of dog filth that Stuart is throwing upon us right now. Stuart, let me ask you a very simple question. If a simple interface constricts you and constrains you, what interface out there? Give me an example of an interface that lets you be free, that lets you fly and do whatever you want with your computer.
Microsoft Windows.
And the Microsoft Windows.
Know, and the reason you know this is the case is precisely because everyone has been doing exactly what they want with their computer for 40 years. That's why, importantly, Microsoft Windows has 90% of the market. And your beautiful Unity system has 0.90% of the market.
Really hate you right now. All right. So let's assume that the interface alone is the reason for that, is reason for that power in Windows, as you so succinctly put it. Now, let's compare the interface between Ubuntu Unity and Microsoft Windows. Come up with one example to me of a task that you can accomplish on Microsoft Windows because of the interface alone that you cannot accomplish because of Ubuntu Unity's constrictive and constrained, as you put it, interface. One example of something you just can't do.
Okay, well, one thing that you can't do is launch Modern Warfare 3.
No. Let's pull this back here. We're not talking about differences in API sets and binary compatibility and things like that. We're talking about the interface here. Stay on message.
He's worried about ternary compatibility.
We're not getting into that.
That's it.
One example. What can't you do from a user interface perspective on Ubuntu's Unity or similar extremely pared down interfaces like that that you can do on something like Windows?
I can get a listing of all of my hardware. I can get a detailed view of all the devices connected to the system and individually turn them on and off, because that's the kind of thing that you need to do. In an ideal world, I'm sure, if you bought a machine which basically didn't have any hardware and only had Brian approved hardware in it, then
such as purchasing hardware from System 76,
you'd never need to fiddle with the hardware. In practice, in the universe we actually live in, You end up with machines where something's gone wrong, where there's a new version of a device driver. I want to be able to go in, see the hardware tree, look at the individual devices, turn them on and off, see which versions of the drivers they're running, be able to upgrade them or not. Now, I can do that on Windows. I can't do that with your Ubuntu Unity because that stuff's not available to you because you're not supposed to care about that sort of thing. You're supposed to just sit back and trust Brian and the Unity team to decide on which hardware you should be allowed to run and which you shouldn't.
Yes, absolutely. I am confused as to what sort of horrible, dystopian, messed up future you live in where people are cobbling together hardware from trash can pieces and parts and having to turn on and off their hardware all the time. Why not just buy a good piece of hardware from such as the fine folks at System76.com and put it on your desktop? The webcam works, the sound works. What exactly do you need to turn on and off all the time?
Right.
What are you turning on and off on your hardware every 5.5 minutes that you need this fancy schmancy super complicated interface to do it?
anything where I want to save battery life, I want to save power consumption, things like that. Because the key point here is that I know more than you do about what I want to do with my computer, right?
Disagree.
Take another example. We talked about Windows earlier. Take Microsoft Word, right? You get an awful lot of things from people on your side of the fence, the simplicity is king people, that everyone only uses 10% of the Word interface, and therefore why? What's the point in having all the rest of it there? And that's true. Everyone does only use 10%, but everyone uses a different 10%, right? The 10% of Microsoft Word's interface that you'd use and the 10% that I'd use are almost completely different. Yeah, everyone uses bold, which is why it's right up there on the toolbar. But saying, well, I never use mail merge, therefore no one should ever have it, that to me is elitism. Jono's talking about elitism earlier, but what I'm for is democracy. I want people to be able to pick and choose for themselves what they want, rather than having it imposed on them from above by a bunch of people who decide what's important on my computer and what isn't. I mean, honestly, do you really believe that, Jono? Seriously? That's what you think? That someone should sit somewhere with a tick list and say, this is what you're allowed to do and this is what you isn't? That's elitism.
I'm going to respond with my final closing argument here.
I was going to say, we're running short of time now, so yeah, closing arguments each.
Very straightforward. Recently, I saw the movie Lucy. In Lucy, there was a nice young woman who used only 10% of her brain. She then was given a drug that allowed her to gradually use increasing amounts of her brain until she used 100% of her brain. Along that path, horrible things happened. Lucy's life got turned upside down and things just went bad. So you know what? Sometimes it's better to just have 10% than to try and go above and beyond. And you know what? If I'm going to have interfaces dictated down for me from above, I want it to be from people who came from friggin' outer space. And you know who came from outer space? Mark Shuttleworth. End of story.
By the way, I'd just like to remind listeners that we have the Bad Voltage remix competition going on right now.
Oh, no, shut up. Just like,
I was actually going to say that.
All right, your final rebuttal there, Stu?
Right, so I'm allowed a final rebuttal, am I?
Yeah, you get 7 seconds.
What Brian's describing, I mean, he's mentioning a film there, but the film he's really describing is Shutter Island, where you have Leonardo DiCaprio, and then at the end, they lobotomize him. Right. That's what Brian wants to do to you and me and your computers, and I, for one, won't stand for it. We need to escape from New York, right? Don't be Leonardo DiCaprio in Shutter Island. Be Snake Plissken.
So there you have it, Bad Voltage community. So now what you need to do is head over to community.badvoltage.org and find the poll that we've created for this and vote. Who do you think took a better anti-position?
And just to be clear, the film that I referenced had Scarlett Johansson in it. So remember that when you're voting.
Okay. Kurt Russell's not that cool. You get to win on that particular point. Oh, man, I hated that.
Yeah, that was rough.
Okay, I believe that I've been forced to say things that I didn't want to, or said things that I did want to and then regretted it enough for this show.
This show.
Possibly my whole life, but this show.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
By the way, just before we go on, I'd like to note, I had this observation once we did the Reverso debate thing. It really just goes to show that you and Brian can literally debate on anything. Like, you are both very convincing. I thought you did a very good job there.
Well, I've heard all of this crap spouted by Stuart for so long now. I just kind of parroted it back to him, and that's how I won that one.
I just basically, you know, my internal Brian just let it surface for a bit.
Although, I'm really glad that me and Stuart have each other inside each other.
Oh, we do.
Okay.
Simultaneously.
That's recorded.
although, in the spirit of talking about opinions on previous segments, I also ought to point out that once the microphones were off, Jono confessed that he has, in fact, used a drill like a gun. So
I did. I said no such thing.
You see?
Dude, right, maybe, everyone's done that.
Maybe a little bit, I'll be honest with you. I actually got into DIY quite a lot when I was younger, and I was awful at it, as you can imagine.
Hang on, that where you have the little plastic hammer and then a star-shaped thing and a square-shaped thing and have to bang them into the correct holes?
That was actually his last DIY project.
It was.
Last week. Yeah.
It's like, no, honey, we're buying it for Jack, really, right? Speak and spell or whatever.
I'm like, I need to figure this shit out. I'm a husband now. So anyway, so we're wrapping things up. So we should probably talk of some of the cool little things that are going on in the community, shouldn't we?
Yeah, I think we should.
Language.
Oh, yes.
Remember that list of stuff that we wrote?
Oh, yeah, no, I neglected to note that the list has names against it. I do apologise, I'm first. So, yes, 2 weeks ago we announced the Mix Us Up competition. What did we actually call the competition? The only rule I remember was that Jono's not allowed to think up the names of competitions anymore, so it's probably something sensible like Remix Bad Voltage or something. But the idea was that you should take... the show's released under Creative Commons. It allows remixes and so on. So take bits from the shows, mix them up, make something new and interesting. You might want to, for example, pull out all the embarrassing things that Jono said or make Jono have a conversation with himself or something like that.
These are all great ideas.
But do something, come up with something, post to the forums. There's a thread on community.badvoltage.org and come up with something cool. And we have a prize. What's the prize, Brian?
We have prizes.
Oh, man. This prize is potentially the most exciting prize I've ever seen on any show, period.
Potentially.
No matter what. Every single presenter of Bad Voltage is going to pick something from their houses and send it to you. You don't know what it's going to be. We don't even necessarily know what it's going to be yet, but we're going to pick something. It could be a can of pudding from Stuart. It could be an old USB cable from Brian. You don't know what you're going to get, but it's going to be awesome, and you're going to get something from each of the four of us.
It is. It's genuinely interesting. I mean, I have spent some considerable time thinking what I'm going to pick from Jono's house to be sent to you.
I actually have already picked out what I'm going to send to someone, and it's epic cheap at the same time. So
it will be.
It's awesome.
We should make it clear though. It will be more than a kind of putting in a USB cable. So it should be something.
I wouldn't necessarily
how great of a prize would that be?
Though. I haven't got as much stuff anymore. I've moved. I haven't got as much stuff as I used to have.
When you first moved into your flat, I visited your flat and I saw the massive pile of crap that you've got in there. You have like a computer graveyard going back as well.
Oh, God,
so
I do.
You have plenty of stuff.
I could donate people something out of the computer graveyard, you know. So if you need an HDMI to 1995 parallel printer port cable, you know where to look.
Dude, that signed... Bam.
There it is.
That's an
awesome prize.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Do we have to sign? I guess we should all sign whatever we send out.
I think we should sign whatever we send out to the people, even if it is just a USB cable. I think it should be signed.
There'd be a signed USB cable.
How awesome is that? Anyway, that's rad. Yeah. In the forum, we've also got something very important that was just happening. Neuro was kind enough and benevolent enough to be our queen for the last how many weeks now? 6 weeks, 5 weeks, something like that?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Long time.
We gave him the queen's avatar as a joke, and he kept it, and he stuck with it. And he spoke as the queen for the last like month and a half, and he just has abdicated his throne.
That's for sure.
He kept it way longer than he needed to. He's abdicated. He stepped down, which means that the Bad Voltage Forum is now in a complete state of anarchy while we reset up the parliament and do all that stuff. But I want to say thanks to Nero for being the queen for as long as
he was.
Thank
you, Nero. By the way, Mr. Lunduke, you deserve a bit of credit here as well. So on the last show, Brian was punished for not joining the show.
Rather more egregiously than anyone has previously been punished.
Yeah, it was probably the worst punishment.
Have to say. Yeah. I was pretty annoyed about the Charlton Heston thing, but it wasn't that bad.
Okay.
Just so people know about this, Brian's avatar was set to a Jupiter Broadcasting logo in a heart. And he didn't just set it on the forum. The man is a king.
That's right. He raise the bar
Twitter.
There.
He said it on Google Plus. He's been going on about this, and we've all denied it because, you know, we have lives to lead. And he did it, and he owned it, and he took it like a man. And yeah, massive respect to London.
And he has, to be clear there, here, he has there set a record for heroism which will never be beaten or even equaled by any of the rest of us.
Not even close.
Okay, guys, so I didn't really think this through when I did it. So setting my avatar on Twitter and Facebook or things like that, no big deal, right? No biggie. And once I set it in Google+, that means it's also set in all of my Google accounts, which means my Gmail, Google Hangouts, everywhere that I interact with people through email, chat, everything is that freaking heart with the Jupiter Broadcasting logo in it. And it is slowly driving me insane. In fact, as soon as we finish recording this, I'm going to go back and change it absolutely everywhere.
It is one of the things I love when Ack changed his to the Charlton Heston with a gun was just every time, like, I could hear his voice and I could see that image. And that was the pleasure of seeing the change, right? And it's the same thing, like, when you're posting on Google+ about stuff, just seeing that heart.
It's brutal, man. Oh,
gave me so much
the
pleasure.
The thing which most terrifies so me pleasure. Is I've now grown used to it. Over the last 2 weeks, I see the heart and think, oh, that's Brian.
I know, it's an easy way of identifying Brian, right? Yeah.
It's just horrible, yeah. Man. I'm so excited for getting kudos, to change man. It. I need no, to come kudos, up with something though. Awesome.
You now have official permission that. To get rid of it, yes.
Thank
yes.
God. Thank you, guys. You're very generous.
So another great thing about the forum, though, kind of moving on from there, is when we say something that's either incorrect or we forget a point, our great viewers or listeners are very quick to sometimes point that out to us. And we had the debate about Creative Commons on the last show, and someone pointed out that we missed that one of the places that is used by far the most is in the scientific community because there was a need for that. So we appreciate you pointing that out. And as always, if you have any corrections or you think we missed something, do head to community.badvoltage.org and let us know.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, I posted a message to the forum a little while ago about we have a growing Twitter account and Google+. We've got a great community there that's growing. And we don't really have like a group picture of the four of us. And some of you won't realize, well, many of you will know that we record this actually remotely. We're all based in different parts of the world. And while Jeremy, Ack, and I have all met together in the same room, we've never actually met Brian. The four of us have never actually stood in the same room together, which I think is kind of weird and cool at the same time.
Have we stood in the same room separately? Is there a place we've all been?
That's a good question, isn't it? Yeah. Scale is... Oh, you haven't been to Scale,
have
you?
I've been to Scale. Maybe
OSCON?
Have you been to OSCON, Brian?
I've been to OSCON.
Yeah, I've been to OSCON.
But when I went, maybe it was OSCON. In San Jose.
Oh, yeah, I never went to the San Jose one.
Yeah. So, anyway, we're reaching out to the community because we'd like to have a group photo of the four of us that we can kind of put on the social media networks. I posted something about this to the forum and kind of linked it around. Stuart Langridge, a man not notably known for his artistic talents, put together this actually pretty incredible image with...
I thought it was hilarious.
Brian in a kilt. I'm like Adrian Smith from Iron Maiden, who's supposed to be me. Who is it? Robert Downey Jr., who's supposed to be Jeremy. And was that... Who the hell was the other guy? Was that the dude who died? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Did you actually do that?
Yes.
I didn't believe
skills.
It. Myself,
spill the power of the anyway. Yes. In every sense of the word. The Philip Seymour Hoffman thing was I was terribly depressed when he died, how many people say, oh, did you know you look like him, by the way? I'm like, oh, good.
Yeah. So anyway, so if anybody's got some artistic talent can take four pictures, there's plenty of pictures online of the four of us.
There are not. Of pictures online of the three of us. Garcia has stayed away from the front of a camera for his whole entire life, as far as I can tell.
That I have. That's a cognizant decision, usually, yeah.
Yeah. Have you not got a couple of publicity shots or something?
Yeah.
I'm sure I do.
Alternatively,
if someone doesn't want to Photoshop it but has far too much money on their hands, if we have a space explorer listener or anything like that, if you'd like to fly us to the same place, we will pose for an actual picture.
I would
just like to throw that out there.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, we would definitely do that.
Would not turn that down.
So yeah, so Jeremy, post some pictures to the forum so people can use it as material.
I will Google as many pictures of Robert Downey Jr. as I can, sir.
All right. Anyway, so that's it. Big thank you to Emma Marshall for joining us from System 76 for a great interview. And again, big thanks to Bytemark Hosting and A2 Hosting for very generously providing the bandwidth that we have for actually making the show possible.
Yeah, no, it's all fantastic. We're all off to change our avatars to a big heart with a picture of Brian in the middle of it.
Oh, yeah.
See you on the next show.
Yeah. See ya.